The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is, how can IT help manufacturing regain its edge? And our guests for today's show are Greg Fell, who's the Global Information Officer with Terex Corporation. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great, great. And we also have Dan McKinnon, who's the Director of Supply Chain Enterprise Solutions for Intel. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How's the life going there?
It's going great.
Great, awesome. So in the manufacturing sector, I think you come from different organizations. However, there may be some common challenges, and that's what we are here to discuss, is why is manufacturing always facing situations where, you know, while there is a global competitiveness out there and while we are trying to utilize the technology in terms of advancing it and trying to use it for supply chain optimization, et cetera, but still some of manufacturing is seeing a downturn, an overall steady but downturn. So, Greg, what do you think? Let's get started with you. What do you think what could be happening here?
Well, I'm not sure I would totally agree that we're in a downturn in terms of manufacturing process. Clearly, we're in a downturn in terms of the economy, and we've seen that in our business here. That's, you know, we've had a downturn that's hit us about 50%. So in the construction equipment industry, clearly we're down. But in terms of manufacturing, I mean, it's still, you know, every day I go to a manufacturing facility, I'm still a bit in awe, and I've spent most of my career in manufacturing, that it's a complicated, complex process to really manufacture some of these products. And it's not getting easier and simpler. It's getting more complex as we, you know, add capabilities to these products. So, you know, I think part of it is just the complexity and the global competitiveness. I think, if anything, really what's happened is, as markets like India and China are starting to expand and the billions of people that live there, they want to have the same quality of life as the rest of the Western world, and that's put a lot of competition into the system to make sure that we're excellent. So,
again,
I mean, I've been to, Intel's facilities, and if anyone has ever taken a tour of an Intel facility like I have, it's an amazing process to go through. And so, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that the manufacturing process per se is in a downturn, other than just, trying to support what we need to get done across the world.
No. What we just discussed here is that, we have global manufacturing facilities. How much of technology have we leveraged so far in squeezing every penny out of any supply chain slackness that might exist? And then are we at that nth degree of squeezing the penny that we are done with that and now we're looking for another avenue so that we can finally see some changes, and to that point also, additional thing is that how far should we try to squeeze the penny? Why not look at the top-line growth-centric innovation and other things which would really bring growth versus trying to just do see a saving? So, Dan, what do you think?
Well, I think we're never done squeezing the next penny out, right? I think it's a continuous process, and at Intel, we focus a lot on continuous improvement. And, you know, the other thought is there's never the end state that you're trying to reach. It is always the next state, right? So we're in position A. We want to get to position B, cost C, And I think it's a continuous process, and you have to put yourself on a path where you're continuously learning and continuously improving. And I think you have to be willing to change and on an ongoing basis. You look at the Intel strategy as an example. Our manufacturing strategy and our product strategy is integrated together. We have a strategy called the TikTok model. Every 2 years, we come out with a new technology. We basically reinvent manufacturing and our manufacturing process and our technology that our products are on. Every 2 years, we then launch a new technology. And then the next year, in a two-year cadence also, we launch new products. So every other year, it's a new technology, and every other year, it's a new product architecture. So basically, every year, you're reinventing yourself, and you're coming out with something new. So whether that's you choose that to drive cost or drive performance or both, it's a way to always continuously be, you know, build into your culture, build into your process that you're continuously learning, continuously improving, so you're never done. We're not stopping after next year's new technology. We're already working on the one that's going to launch 2 years after that. So I don't think you're ever done. I think you're always going to have to improve, and I think you get in the best position you can when you can choose if you want to improve top line or bottom line or both.
I would just have a follow-up comment. I agree with Dan completely that, you know, we are reinventing ourselves, and here at Terex, we've got a system we call the Terex Management System, and particularly we call it Management System because we're helping management, not just manufacturing process or supply chain, and we're putting out a global ERP system. And we continue to modify and change that system, even though we've just put it in, you know, at some sites 18 months ago, we're already making modifications to make it more successful. But I think the key, and, you know, this kind of gets around this idea of innovation, and people really don't think about manufacturing as innovation, although if they saw some of the manufacturing products, I think people would be surprised at how much innovation takes place. But fundamentally, it's about execution. And while, you know, we all kind of know some of the tricks that it takes to go do these things, the complexity is not as a CIO coming up with what is the new amazing thing that nobody's thought of. It's how to execute things that are very difficult to execute. So you talked about supply chain and things like that. Yes, we all understand that there's opportunities to squeeze pennies out of those things. But the difficult challenge is in the execution. Dan, I don't know if you'd agree with that point, but, I mean, seeing what you guys have done with your copy exact processes and manufacturing, I mean, really that's about execution and doing it well, and that's why you guys are successful.
No, absolutely agree. It's the execution has to be perfect, right? So, you know, especially, you know, we'll use the term run it like a factory. 99.999% reliability, right? You know, and from an IT standpoint, that means it's always got to be up, it's always got to be available, it's always got to be accurate. You know, it's an unprecedented level of precision, availability, automation.
Now, would you say that, Greg, when you are looking at your organization and when we compare that to something what Dan does in his company, there's something to be said about the type of product that you're manufacturing. Would you say that Dan is lucky because his organization is producing something which has a very quick obsolescence and the world changes very fast in that industry? Whereas there are others where you're making widgets, but you could not see a widget just going out of fashion or anything that would cause it to not be consumed, and there is not much incentive for you to keep going back and producing something new, which in turn, of course, keeps you afloat and makes you profitable.
Well, I mean, from our business, we tend to have things that are used for long periods of time. We have equipment that is 35 years old that we still get calls on. So we do not have planned obsolescence, and a lot of our products actually cascade throughout the world. So they may start as a brand new product in the U.S., but 15, 20 years later, they're being used in, you know, Vietnam or Brazil or some other country where they're still getting use out of those products. Really, from a strategy standpoint, you know, we understand that, and so as the economy and the world grows and the need for infrastructure grows, that's really our growth model, not necessarily the obsolescence. But we do have, you know, a parts business that is significant and you know, relatively high profitability business, because the parts that we have wear parts and they wear out, and so people have to have those replaced. So that's really where we get into the obsolescence, if you want to call it that, that the parts wear out and we're there to provide those parts for people, and you know, that's part of our growth as well.
Now, with respect to IT, you know, while we see IT is becoming the very fabric of most organizations, with manufacturing, whether it's just the very nature where IT was not the one which was driving it, and it was had limited capability in order to facilitate how manufacturing gets done, has that changed, or is it just that we feel that we can get more out of IT, and that's why we're using it more in this particular sector? Correct.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, this is kind of one of my philosophies as a CIO, which is I don't like to get into the argument that why do they not want to use our products as an IT product. You know, and I tell this to my team, and I actually, you know, when I give speeches to conferences, I have the same point, which is if they're not using your products, then you're not being effective enough at understanding their business process and understanding how you can make it better. So, you know, don't complain when they say, don't they understand we can save money with supply chains? Well, if they don't understand and they're not investing in those things, then you haven't done your job good enough. And really that just means you've got to work harder to really understand it. There are plenty of opportunities to use technology in the way that we do manufacturing, and especially in the high-tech industry like Intel, or, you know, automotive industry where I came from for much of my career. The amount of technology it takes place to manufacture, you know, vehicles, for example, is unprecedented. They can't run it without IT. If the IT systems go down, they send everybody home for the day. So, you know, it is, you know, embedded into those processes because they've seen the value proposition of those. And it's up to us as leaders to continue to push folks to understand what the value proposition and to explain it in such a way that they see the value. And just like they've got to make an investment and decide whether to spend more marketing dollars on advertisements or whether they're going to spend it on IT, that they understand the value proposition if they spend money on marketing. We've got to do just as good a job explaining the value proposition from an IT perspective.
Now, Dan, in your word, while you were a high-tech company all along, and that's why you definitely respect and value technology, however, IT is not pure technology, it is information technology. And as the time went by, as you tried to do bigger, faster, cheaper type of a mode so that you can literally help the whole world get on the computer's bandwagon or this computing bandwagon, did IT actually play a driver's role, or you just kept enabling what the business wanted to do?
I think it's a little both, right? So I look at it as our job is not to run the business. Our job is to help the business run better. And specifically, my group in IT supports the supply chain. And our mission that we wrote for our team is to, you know, use information and technology, obviously we're IT, to simplify the business. To help simplify the business so it can run better, so it can run faster, better, cheaper, and they can have choice. Right? So in everything we do, we try to simplify, and that comes from the number of tools, the data flow, the data structure, the simplifying their processes, taking processes that are done in three or four different tools and integrating them up into one process, integrated process layer. So there's, I think it's a combination of reacting and enabling the business to run better, but there's also a part of our job which is the art of the possible, which is it is our role to go to our business partners at Intel and show them what they can be doing because they don't understand, right? Whether it is data infrastructure, whether it is, you know, so you take an example for our supply chain. Intel just got back in the AMR top 25 supply chain ratings. And it was a lot based on the work we did in partnership in IT, where we improved Intel's ability to say yes to our customers' orders by 300% over a two-year period. How did we do that? Visibility of our inventory, visibility of their demand, their demand signal. We did it through implementing vendor-managed inventory, which is basically using B2B connectivity to take everything online. We're taking our field sales force more online. We're, you know, running manufacturing systems and automation systems in the, you know, the best manufacturing factories in the world that are highly automated and doing it with high reliability. So there's a combination of both. We can't get confused. Our job isn't to, you know, take the order or do the build plan for the factory or to run the factory, but it is to do it better.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and look at the way we could get a product, which is, of course, manufactured, be utilized forever, and that's where the value is delivered, and that's what the perceived value by a customer. Or we say, okay, let's beautifully build a product which has got a ton of features, but then it's only available, say, for 5 years, because after that, either it will start rusting or it will start malfunctioning, and you are going to be almost prompted to say, let's look for a new model. Which one would actually revive the manufacturing industry at the same time, not get the customer loyalty jeopardized, so that once it does happen in 5 years and the customer has to look for options, they will not lose this, they will not choose another manufacturer for the same product that they want to consume. Let's explore this more when we come back. Please stay tuned.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So Dan, let's start with you with respect to the approach that would actually work better for manufacturing in coming days. Would you want to see a product being produced with a lot of features and basically which accommodates the current needs, and it at least promises that it is going to take care of the current needs, whether or not those needs may exist in that full degree as it's promised, but then it is also going to see obsolescence very quickly versus producing a car, for example, which never rusts and it always drives, and you know, you drive and your grandson will drive as well?
Yeah, both are interesting challenges, and we actually have sort of both type of products at Intel, although our main products are, they obsolete very quickly, right? You know, the minute you come out with a PC, you know, a laptop with a certain product and a product line that runs that laptop, or a cell phone, that gets obsoleted quite quickly in the marketplace. And it is a little bit by design, and it is a little bit because of necessity of competition. Right? Competition for us drives obsolescence. If we don't as I talked about before, the TikTok model, right? If we're not coming out with the next better processor, microprocessor that's consuming less power and provides more technology and more features and more speed and scale, if we're not doing that on a constant basis, we'll get obsoleted. You know, we'll lose our market share compared to the competition. So, you know, by design, you know, we have to be launching the next product that ultimately, someone that just bought a PC, you know, or you know, a cell phone, will say, "Wow, that's obsolete." And, you know, funny story, my son just said to me last night that he was talking to his kids at school, his friends at school, and they're saying, "Yeah, you should get a new game station." And he said, "Yeah, Dad, that Wii I have is just old." And I'm thinking it's still the coolest thing out there, but it's obsolete in his mind. And so, given the generation that we deal with, the type of technology we deal with, we have to be reinventing. And that means we have to reinvent manufacturing, as I said. We have to reinvent our products, as I said. That creates a challenge, right? So, but it isn't build the same product on the old technology to replace the one that's now rusted, as you say. It's a different type of obsolescence. The other thing we're challenged with is a product we make has many different feature sets in it, and so we use a manufacturing process of postponement. So as we build a piece of silicon, a computer chip, we do not put it into its final form until very late in the game when we can sense demand and then decide the combination of power and speed we want that component to be. It's classic postponement. And so what we do is we have a sort of a push model in manufacturing and then a pull model through the back end where we do final configuration. And so those manufacturing strategies lead to IT tools and tool sets and tool capabilities that you need to go build for that manufacturing environment.
You know, just to follow up on Dan's point, I think part of it also in trying to get at your question depends on whether we see this as an investment in what we're buying. So when you talk about, you know, rusting or a vehicle in terms of an automobile or something, that's much more of an investment as a percentage of someone's, income, whereas in the case of a Wii or my new laptop that I got 2 weeks ago with an Intel processor in it, that's just about what capabilities I want, whether it's a new cell phone. It's not considered an investment, so I'm not too worried that I've obsoleted something. But if it comes to my car, I'm not going to get a new car every week when they come out with the newest feature. So I think you got to take that into consideration when you look at your markets, and that's why, just like every company, every company goes to market a little bit differently. I know in our company, we go to market differently even within our different segments, whether it's a crane product that takes 1 year to manufacture, and yes, I said that right, 1 year, or our scissor lifts that we make one every 8 minutes, or if it's a Intel product where they make, 10,000 every minute or whatever their schedule is, you're going to have a different go-to-market strategy associated with those things.
Now, Greg, in your world, would you be called upon and would be requested to provide the insight which will allow your company to make the right strategy, because it's not always going to be one strategy that will keep evolving. So what kind of support do they expect from you as an IT leader?
Yeah, I mean, in my case, given my automotive background, that comes into play significantly in terms of how they set up their manufacturing strategy. One of the reasons I became CIO here is because they saw the value proposition for me to help them with all their processes, not just, you know, figuring out what their PC strategy is. In fact, I spend very little percentage of my time worried about that, not zero, but I spend much more of it worried about how we're going to optimize our manufacturing and supply chain processes. And so I think that's our job as a leader, and I think that's really where they see the value proposition of an organization, is when they can help the overall processes.
Now, overall, if you were to look at, if you were to just inventory, what value can IT bring for manufacturing industry, and how can it take it forward? Which are the top three items which are typically looked upon? Dan?
Well, I would say visibility is number one, right? So you have to have really good visibility, and this is something we've been working on. And, really improved. You know, in the last couple of years, we've taken over $1 billion of inventory out of our supply chain. While we increased, revenue, while we increased service level, while we, increased delivery performance. And so the way you do that is, one of the ways you do that is visibility. Visibility to your inventory and visibility to your partners' inventories, whether it's, downstream to your customers and what's in the market and what's in their factories and what's in the chain behind them, right? Because we don't build the end product. We are a component that goes into a product, or your suppliers. And having very, very good visibility and control and collaboration is something that we've really focused on and something that you can really leverage technology to achieve. That's got to be number one. I think the other one is really getting better visibility to demand. So inventory is a piece of it. Demand's clearly another part of it, right? Understanding your demand, characterizing your demand, using, information technology systems to better forecast your demand. And one of the biggest and the best ways of doing that is consumption. Getting the true consumption signal of what's actually selling through is the most critical component of demand forecast, right? It's the only true forecast is what you sold yesterday. And having visibility to that and getting that information shared through B2B, getting that then communicated and used back into your manufacturing plants, whether it's through your planning processes, your build plan, whether you go straight to replenishment, where you're consuming something and then you're going up and launching a replenishment order. All of that has the work that we do in Intel and IT built really well into it.
So, Greg, is your life any different with respect to the top three items that, are expected out of IT?
No, I think that's the one thing that we certainly have in common in terms of managing of the supply chain and giving visibility and knowing both the demand side as well as the supply side and understanding where your suppliers are, but also what your customers' requirements are. And we've spent a lot of time in putting in a robust slotting processes so that we can make sure that customers are getting what they want. And when we did the analytics, what we saw was a lot of customers were buying things 6 months out because they were anticipating maybe they would want to use something 6 months later and then potentially changing or canceling orders on us. And so it created a lot of churn in the system. And so we spent a lot of time trying to get to a more robust way of saying, look, we'll give you this slot. When you need it, a month out, you let us know, but don't give us an order just to hold something for us, because that has reverberations down the supply chain. So that's very critical for us, and it actually increases our customer satisfaction. I would say the one thing that's different about our business than maybe Intel is it's also the customer-facing piece of it. Because we go directly to our customers in a lot of places, we do have a lot of processes to keep track of, customers and you know, call center and that type of stuff. So that's obviously a critical thing for us to do well in addition to the supply chain.
Hey, I must add, what Greg described as the reduction of the order horizon and elimination of change orders, if you will, right? Pull and push out, swap, different industry, exact same problem. Exact same solution, right? We did the exact same thing. We shortened that horizon because what we're doing is chasing a demand signal, which wasn't true. Customers don't know what they want 12, 13 weeks from now, you know, by day, by week. Yet we place an order and then we chase it and change it six times.
Right.
And so that just creates work for them, work for us. Let's just be responsive, right? Cut that horizon, be responsive to their order, you know, and then when an order's real, book it and ship it and get it to their dock quickly.
So, knowing this information from a manufacturing standpoint, most CIOs, hopefully all CIOs of manufacturing companies, understand that problem. There are different ways to go solve the problem, but the real, going back to our original point when we started about execution and can you do that well? Can you make it seamless? Can you do it cost effective? That's the real trick. It's not just that I'm clever enough to have the idea that we should go solve that problem. That's table stakes, and really it's about execution beyond that.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back and discuss about this mantra that exists, which says more with less, but in many cases, especially in manufacturing, multiple cases have been found. They say the mantra is more with nothing, and which could mean that, you know, your budgets are cut to the bones, and this is a typical complaint which is shared by many IT leaders that, you know, manufacturing industry doesn't see IT as a strategic component of their whole business, and thus the money doesn't flow that easy. The purse strings are not open that easy. So when you are trying to do your best as an IT leader with this more with nothing mantra that is being followed in the organization, how do you deliver? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and explore.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.avol, A-V-V-A-L, avol.com. Visit today.
Have questions about wind power? Listen for the TLG Wind Power Hour with Terry from TLG Wind Power Products. He'll cover the ins and outs of wind energy with you, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or want a ready-made product. Let Terry give you the know-how and understanding of making wind energy work for you. Terry will share decades of hands-on experience so that you don't have to learn about wind power the hard way. The TLG Wind Power Hour, live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Green Talk Network.
Are you looking for a show to help you increase your sales and subsequently your income? Want to know what works and what doesn't? Do you want to have some fun and learn at the same time? Listen for Let's Talk Sales to Increase Your Income with Len and Jack. Yep, it's a long title, but it's designed to educate you, the effective sales professional. Each week, hosts Len DiNincenzo and Jack Cullen will help you stay focused on doing the basics of your trade consistently well. Tune in Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So there was one mantra that existed which said, more with less, which means that you try to get creative. What can someone do when the mantra becomes more with nothing? And that is typically happening in the manufacturing industry because of the fact that they feel that there's a stepchild syndrome that's hovering and which is causing IT to not get budgets which are enough, or in fact, they cannot do much with it at all. And at the same time, they have to justify their existence. Not a very good place to be in. So how does one survive and make create value for the company? Greg.
Well, obviously, you try to stretch your dollars as most effectively as you can. So in the case of Terex, we do things like leveraging open source in a lot of cases, or looking for opportunities to share technologies even with companies outside of our segment. So, you know, we've had, you know, conversations with people like Pella Windows and Parker Hannifin that are not competitors to us, but, hey, where can we share some ideas so that we're not reinventing the wheel all the time? But I think this kind of goes back for me to the point that I made earlier about your responsibility as an IT leader is not to whine about this. I wish my budget was twice the size, not because I want the company to spend more money, but because I think I can ultimately save the company more money. And it's up to me to figure out a way to convince them to effectively do that. And when I look at our manufacturing facilities, and we've got 50 manufacturing facilities around the globe, what's always interesting to me is that some of the sites have decided to invest in IT with one or two resources. And I have other sites that manufacture products and have a similar revenue line that have 6, 7, in some sites, 10 IT people. What that tells me is that there's not a minimum that it takes to run the business, but that the groups that have the 10 people at that site are coming up with better ways to convince them that they're an effective way for them to spend your money. And if I just make the simple analogy that, you know, if I went to the business leader and said, do you trust me? And they say yes, and I say, give me $100 and I'll give you $200 8 months from now, they'll take me up on that. But if I go in and say, I think you need this new capability and it's really going to be great, I'm not going to get that. Anytime you can come in and say, here's the savings associated with it, and you prove it and you have a track record of delivering on it, they're going to invest in you. And so it's really just on us to continue to push that.
Now, Dan, what would the situation at your end, because, you know, your organization, perhaps on the surface, it would look like that they get it. But typically when someone says that I don't want to give you much or, in fact, give you nothing and still produce, either they don't get it or they just don't believe that if the money, more money was given, there will be incremental value delivered. So what is the situation because of it? This is a chronic issue across, you know, not only within an organization but across the industry itself.
Yeah, this is a constant battle, right? So I think what Greg described is you compete. Right, it's you have to show the value and the business value, and you have to show the return on the investment, and you have to compete within your company, you know, against the other people looking for increased budgets or hold the budget flat or whatever the environment is, and you have to compete with them. And I think what you have to do is you have to focus on, you know, internally in your own shop, you know, eliminating the waste. You have to work on simplifying things and prioritizing. And I think you can, you know, we look at ways of self-funding, for example. You know, I have a budget, and if I can look at my budget and I can take part of that, and what I do is I take part of my budget, and within my team, if people come to me and they say, hey, I have a program that if you give me $100,000, I'll return $200,000 within the quarter or next quarter, I don't even have to go to my boss and ask. My boss would never know I spent the money.
Right.
Because I have a self-funding ROI that because the cycle time is so short. And so I think one thing you can do in these environments is look for the quick wins, right? And you generate your own shop, within your own budget, a self-funding mechanism that helps you then fund your own projects, right? I don't have to go ask for money. I have my own money, and I can use it that way. I think that's one way we do it. I think the other thing to do is, you know, you got to look at, you know, within your own shop. Another example is server refresh, right? We're IT, right? Server refresh. Refreshing your servers has a wonderful ROI. It helps you with green. It helps you with energy. It helps you with cost. It helps you with power. It, you know, it has a wonderful ROI. One thing you can do in IT is just, you know, for the corporation, for your company, is look within your own shop to figure out how to do that, right? It helps with, you know, facility reuse. If I reuse a data center and refresh a data center, I don't have to go build another data center. Look at your business partners and help them, you know, as they're saying, okay, I'm expanding this to a new data center for more storage. Well, if you retarget that money to refresh a current data center, we don't have to build that facility. So it's all about competing and then partnering to get better value than if you just did Project A. Do A and B and get a better return.
And we do have the advantage of having Moore's Law on our side as well. And so, you know, Intel's an example of that, but the cost of what it costs for the company to spend on a PC or a server versus what it costs today from 2 years ago is significantly less. I'm using some of those savings, and in fact, I had a process to go capture that and use those savings to offset some other increases in other areas. Those are those opportunities that exist out there that, you know, frankly, we have as an advantage in IT that other folks don't. The guys that have to go replace the equipment, you know, a robot or something, robots aren't getting significantly cheaper. They're not on the Moore's Law curve of cheaper every year, but our stuff is. So we got to figure out how to make sure we harness Moore's Law to our advantage.
Now, coming to this old, you can say, saying that we should be producing what sells versus selling what they produce. This kind of goes against the typical manufacturing approach that there's an R&D cell which comes up with something and we produce and then we go out and try to sell. And if it sells, then we try to mass produce. Instead, if you were to turn it over, then you may have a better chance. But how, that is a challenge in itself. But in case if we did know what could potentially sell, could there be a way IT could essentially help in those areas? So then we will be, on our way to success, and manufacturing will not have this issue about producing a product which is not selling enough. So then we try to find another. We go back to the drawing board, try to produce another product. So where can IT turn this thing whole issue around?
Yeah, this is a great question, and we face this a lot. You look at semiconductor industry, and you look at our industry, and Intel itself. We have a long lead time. It takes us 2 years to build a factory that costs $3 billion, right? So we have a huge investment every 2 years. We dig a big hole in the ground, build this wonderful factory. It takes 2 years, and then we build products in that factory, and you know it takes us a couple months to build the product. Well, you know, I don't know what PC I'm going to buy when I go to the store tomorrow to buy a PC, yet my marketing guys do a demand forecast and say, here's what we need to start in wafers in fab that we're going to sell, you know, 2-3 months from now. And the accuracy level of that is, you know, good at best, right? My rule is there's three things about the demand forecast that are true. One is it's wrong. Two is it's going to change. And three is they'll give you another one. Right, so
that's clever.
The way you deal with that is speed and agility, right? You have to be fast. You work on cycle time. You shorten that forecast horizon because your manufacturing processes are faster, right? So speed kills. So if you get faster, and then I build a product, and we have a push-pull model. I look at a forecast, I look at my inventory targets, and we launch in fab, and then as a product comes through manufacturing, as we get close to the end, we delay the final differentiation so we can make product A, B, A1, A2, A3, right? So then we can do final configuration. IT helps all the way in that, right? It helps from the automation of factory for speed and cycle time, the visibility of demand, the visibility of the forecast, the consumption, as I said before, which is the best signal you can have. How do you take a consumption signal and then get it back to your factory really quick so they can decide how to final configure that PC so they get short cycle time on demand and the right signal? Putting in systems that help you with push-pull, being able to product, you know, do product differentiation. IT is embedded in all of those features with tools, visibility, taking data and turning it into information so people can make decisions quickly. All of that is embedded in that process.
Greg?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's the case. And again, that's what's remarkable about manufacturing is in, even though we're talking about products that are on the spectrum of you know, things that, you know, cranes that are, you know, huge products versus, you know, a chip that, you know, you can fit in the palm of your hand, the reality is the problem is the same problem. We look at what we call order to delivery, making sure from the order time to the time it takes to deliver that product, how can we shrink that? How can we cut a couple days off? And in the case of Intel, it's probably a couple seconds on some of their processes. But by reducing that and increasing demand planning processes, we're able to come to market quicker with products, and we're able to give the customer what they want quicker so that we don't end up with obsolete inventory that we have to figure out how to sell. To your point, you know, what sells versus selling what you have, we want to try to reduce that inventory as much as possible. And I've got a significant number of IT projects specifically targeted at trying to figure out how to reduce our raw materials inventory and our finished goods inventory. And so, you know, without going into a lot of technical detail, we spend a lot of cycles thinking about that. And, you know, for the folks that are listening, you know, on the radio here, the real question is, what are you doing to think about that from a business standpoint? You know, you got to take yourself out of the, you know, IT technology hat and start thinking like a business person. And I spent most of my career as a developer, and you know, so I've been a very technical person at points in my career. But that's not really what's going to help sell these projects. You've got to come up with a better way for them to be effective.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and come right back and very quickly touch the topic, which, of course, is connected to the discussion that we just had about producing what sells versus selling what they produce. Would it help if we were to focus more on demand shaping versus management of demand and or corresponding delivery? Because if our focus goes in that and then IT could really help in that area, then wouldn't it be a great problem to have that people are lining up? And then you will not have any, of course, you still have to manage the supply chain and everything else, but there's no dearth of customers, and then you are able to shape the demand based on what your infrastructure is, what your capabilities are at a given day, and kind of almost put a throttling unit which says, okay, this is what we want. Now, right now we want to increase the demand. This is how when we want to decrease it. And then based on your capability versus always trying to match up your capability to uncertainty in the market fluctuations. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832.
Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol.com. Visit today.
Money. We love it, we hate it, and everything in between. You can be the master of your life and your own economics. Join Professor Laurie Lamantia each week for the program, Making Peace with Money. Laurie will help you realize the power to create fulfillment in your life and shed new light on your money madness. You'll learn how to make peace with money and feel the joy and freedom renewed in your life. Making Peace with Money is broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. So the point I'm trying to make here is that how about us being able to shape the demand or at least attempt to do so, and if the focus could be there, then the life could be much better, where we could see that this is the capability we have, and so this is the amount of demand we can handle, and if we are able to pull the right type of strings, then it will be, life will be good. But how close to reality is that dream? How much of that is possible, Greg?
Well, in our case, it's a challenge given the low volume that we have on some of our products. And so, you know, when you're talking about products that you may make one or two a day or in some cases one or two a week or a month, it's a little more difficult to kind of shape demand from that perspective. And also because of some of the lead times on, you know, castings that may be, 10 feet long, there's a lot of back-end planning to make sure that's successful. So I think we tend to handle demand shaping more as a manual process given the small number of products that we produce.
So are you at all as an IT leader required to produce some insight, or if you had a choice that you could better shape demand, what all things you could have done as an IT leader?
Well, I think more in the case of being a participant of a leadership team and trying to understand and having leaders of each of my segments or each of our segments that is an IT leader and trying to be part of that team, trying to come up with what that plan is. It may be manual processes, but in terms of trying to automate some of that type of shaping, I would say more planning than shaping in terms of the IT tool set that we're looking at right now.
So Dan, in your world where the inventory moves much quicker, and of course if you had a better idea about how to shape the demand, wouldn't it be fun to be able to work in that respect and make a lot more money? And then if we have to do that, are we still going to be limited to us just putting the leader in and participating in with executive management how to shape demand versus having some number crunching, some fuzzy logic, some cool stuff that you could do with IT so that this dream could really become a reality?
Yeah, we work on demand shaping, and we typically work on it and try to utilize demand shaping when there's two opportunities. One is inventory, right? When we have surplus inventory on a product, it might be because of end of life of a product, you have inventory that's becoming obsolete. We'll try to shape the demand there, right, and sell that demand. The other one is when we do new product introductions, which we do a lot, right, because you're selling a certain product line with a certain feature set, and you come up with a new one. You want your demand to shift to that new product line, right? So we use demand shaping techniques there. And I think that the toolbox is available, right? So it's how do you shape demand? You shape it with availability, right? So new product, more available, visibility, speed. If you we don't build a product that end consumers build or buy, right? We sell to manufacturers who put our product in their PCs and their cell phones and whatnot, right? So it's hard for us to shape with marketing, with shelf space, with visibility, but we know our customers do that, right? You buy a PC online, and, you know, what is for sale with that PC, extra RAM, extra speed, is demand shaping. And you go back on the same website 5 hours later, and what's for sale is different. They're shaping demand and managing their inventory, right? So availability, marketing, price and rebate we use, lead time is another one, right? So, you know, you can manage demand with lead time, whether you sell online or whether you don't sell online. We utilize all these techniques. And so, yeah, we're in that conversation. We build tools and capabilities within the supply network for managing supply, managing availability, managing visibility, that where we know that they are utilizing that feature for demand shaping.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Greg and Dan, about sharing and then for sharing your thoughts about how can IT help manufacturing regain its edge. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Sanjay. Had a great time.
Thank you. Great. And if listeners, if you have any questions for Greg or Dan and for us, please send us your emails to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjay Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjay Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.